It's 2:35 a.m. on the back of a bird scooter hurtling down Melrose Avenue. And you're listening to Night Call.
Hello, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida in Los Angeles.
Woo!
And with me here in the studio, I have
Molly Lambert and
Tess Lynch.
What up, guys?
We're in the same room.
Physical space, not just mental space, is being shared today.
Physical space is the greatest special effect of all.
Oh.
Today, we are going to talk about the movie Hereditary. Also, way back in on the Mayo Wars. Get some follow-up on the murder board.
We got to update our stories.
And as always, give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT.
Or an email.
Exactly.
Jinx. Personal jinx.
This week, I am in Los Angeles, as previously established, and we had our first ever Night Call live show.
Yeah, we did.
At Tex/Tay restaurant in Echo Park. It was fabulous. It was so much fun. We are forever grateful for everybody who came out and hung out with us and had a weird buffet-style French dinner with us.
Yeah.
It was a cult ritual. I think we just have to spoiler alert.
Yeah.
We made everyone stand and repeat a pledge.
To Satan.
And our podcast.
You know, Tess was not as comfortable with hailing Satan as I might have expected.
The Catholic, I was shocked by how uncomfortable.
The Catholic jumped out.
The Catholic jumped out.
Yeah, it did. It did. I went home and I saged myself and I cleansed my aura. I felt really, it was weird. In the abstract, I'm totally fine with that. When it was my mouth having to say words, I was like, no, I don't think I can do that.
No, that's how I felt after watching Hereditary last night. I was like, that was evil, and I need to take like a Silkwood shower in rose quartz right now.
Save it. We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We were very grateful for everyone who came, and especially everybody, you know, who stayed as we DJed and partied.
And our special guest, Ryan Johnson,
who came
to talk to us about The Exorcist and other satanic evil films.
Yeah, Ryan Johnson told us about other horror movies he wasn't allowed to watch as a kid, because we found out he was forbidden from watching movies because of Christianity, as was Emily.
Mm-hmm.
Except Ryan, wasn't it that Ryan couldn't watch Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah.
Because it was dark-sided.
I know, but it was a shocking revelation.
Yeah, it is. It does really explain a lot about...
I mean, but Raiders of the Lost Ark, like, believes that the Ark of the Covenant, like... was a thing that exists, you know, like,
yeah, but it melts your face if you get too close to it.
Well, I believe that. If you're evil, that is, if you are a Nazi.
But I also feel like having Raiders of the Lost Ark withheld from you, if somebody was like, you can't see that movie because it'll melt your face off. Of course, then you would see it.
The forbidden
ark. Face melt.
Yep.
We have a night call that we wanted to start off with, just to jump off of what Molly and Tess were discussing last week when I was away.
Emily
was in Venice, and Tess and I took that opportunity. We were going to have a discussion about sauces and what the best sauce is. And we just ended up talking about mayonnaise for like the whole time.
Yep.
It's a hot topic right now.
Yeah, but we were saying, like, when we left, we were like, wait, we didn't even get into hot sauce at all.
Yeah.
That was one of the main things we were going to talk about, is how the best sauce that we both agree is the best sauce is crystal sauce.
Well, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, I was going to ask what the best sauce is.
Crystal hot sauce, because it has the hip tang, which is a term that we learned from Dr. John when he was on, what, Top Chef?
Yeah. He was on Top Chef, and they did a make a hot sauce competition. And he was like, the thing that makes a hot sauce good is that hip tang.
Which
is
the hip tang?
Vinegar. It's the vinegar note.
It's like a tang. It's the umami flavor.
Yeah, and the salty.
I would say Crystal gets that right. But Tabasco also is extremely vinegary, and I think that it kills it.
Tabasco is not as good as Crystal. That is our main...
Well, also because you can't use as much. With Crystal, you can really dump that sauce.
Well, before we get into this sauce question, can I just also read a follow-up text we got from Andrew T. about sauce?
You must.
He says, I almost put my head through the windshield when Tess called black vinegar that sauce they have at Din Tai Fung.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
Then he said, whoops, should have saved my outrage for the ponzu versus soy sauce take.
Oh, sorry, Andrew.
Wait, what was the ponzu versus soy sauce take?
Well, I think that ponzu was better. Well, let me clarify.
Ponzu?
When I said, I wasn't calling the black vinegar the sauce they have at Din Tai Fung. I was referring to the trinity of the soy sauce they have at Din. Knows, like, there are good and bad soy sauce.
Yeah.
It's the combination of what they offer with the ginger, soy, and black vinegar. Right.
Yes.
And black vinegar is not easy to come by at most, you know, like white person markets.
Yeah.
So you go out of your way to get the black soy sauce. But then it's also like you're having to go to a lot of effort to get the ginger. You know, you have to get the shredded ginger.
They have all the elements to make the most delicious dumpling sauce in the world. That is the combination of all the things they have.
It's the holy trinity. So what I'm referring to is the ease of having all those things in one place. I agree that black vinegar is its own thing, but I would not put black vinegar on the same level as the sauce that you make at Din Tai Fung or any good restaurant in the San Gabriel Valley, or it's like Din Tai Fung is a place that we've all gone, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Except I sometimes have a hard time remembering if I've actually gone, because I've gone to wait in the line many more times than I've actually eaten there, because it's like, oh, let's do this, and giving up like halfway through. And
Emily, what's your number one sauce?
My number one sauce is probably like QP mayonnaise. Like,
do you just squirt it on stuff?
Yeah. Ugh. Well, my take on mayonnaise is that I think right now everybody's talking about how it's like the whitest condiment, but like Asian people go for mayonnaise and do mayonnaise better than I think most European cultures who can't see my finger quotes right now.
QP is a superior mayonnaise.
It is more. It's got more of that hip tang in it. QP mayonnaise on like fried foods, on like okonomiyaki, which is like the like cabbage pancake, is like one of the best delights to man.
QP kind of reminds me of like when you get Belgian fries and there's an aioli. If you took out the garlic but kept exactly.
Yeah, that's a very good way to think
about
it.
There's got to be a flavor that overwhelms the mayonnaise. The mayonnaise has to be a vehicle for some other flavor. It can't just be.
Oh, you know what else is a good
mayo.
One? And I couldn't believe you guys didn't bring this up because you said the word spread several times. But the spread at In-N-Out Burger.
That's Thousand Island.
I know, but it's called spread.
It's called spread. Hey, can I tell you guys a secret, though? So the Bob's Big Boy Thousand Island is so far superior to the In-N-Out spread that
I remember you were talking about, like, I got a grip of Thousand Island.
So you can only get – it's a refrigerated sauce, but I'm going to say that Bob's Big Boy, if you get it, it's in the refrigerated aisle. It doesn't have a long shelf life. I buy, like, seven of those. And then you can get your burger from In-N-Out, and it makes – I'm telling you, it elevates it.
Do you bring back the burger and put the sauce on at home?
That's
amazing. Do you go to In-N-Out, and then you just have, like, a container of Thousand Island in your purse that you pull out?
I have not, because it's not shelf stable. Otherwise,
you got Thousand Island in your bag.
Wait, is Thousand Island? This is probably a really basic question, but is Thousand Island like ketchup and mayonnaise and relish mixed together?
Essentially, but it's more sugary, I find. Like, if you try and make it at home, it doesn't capture it.
It's pickle relish.
You know what I like? Fucking remoulade.
Oh, remoulade's great.
Remoulade is like the superior Thousand Island to my mind.
Well, it has a time and a place.
Yeah.
This episode of Night Call is brought to you by Care Of, a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door.
So, Emily, I'm totally skeptical about vitamins and supplements.
Vitamins are magic.
I'm skeptical. I don't know. I never know. But I had been feeling really run down, so I thought I would look into if I maybe had some kind of deficiency. And it turns out that, like a lot of people, maybe even up to 90%, are not getting all of the FDA-recommended vitamins and nutrients they need to feel their best.
You got to get that B12.
It's important. It's true. But it's kind of hard if you're skeptical, especially to know where to start, because you're just kind of browsing the aisles, and it's difficult without a game plan. So that's what makes Care Of really great. You can take their quick, non-judgmental online quiz. And when I say non-judgmental, I was honest and I was kind of like expecting the results to shame me, but they didn't. They were just like, okay, that's you. And we can work with that. So they give you some vitamins to start with. And the best thing is I thought that you can actually learn about what these vitamins and supplements do, why they're best for your diet and lifestyle and health goals and where they come from, which is awesome.
Yeah, they're very transparent about where everything comes from, the sourcing. And you can pick what you want to work on. They're not going to necessarily tell you, here's 80 different vitamins that you need to be taking. If you want to work on sleep, if you want to work on just making sure you have all of your main nutrients that you need every day, there is a vitamin pack for you.
Also, it's super great because they have like they have a scientific advisory board, which is super nice. And so you can actually like look at how many double-blind studies have been done, what the results were. I thought that was really helpful.
I personally am saying this not just because we have an ad spot from Care of, but starting a vitamin regimen is one of the things that keeps me sane in this life. So I highly recommend their product. It makes it so easy to figure out what you need and what you need to take every day. And another great thing about Care of is that they donate a portion of every sale to the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expecting mothers in need with prenatal vitamins. And their supplements are available in vegan and vegetarian options as well. So there's something for everybody.
If you would like to get 25% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter code CALL. Again, for 25% off your first month, visit takecareof.com and enter code CALL. Listen, I think we should get to the email.
Let's get to listen to this email.
This email comes from Megan. Hello, Molly, Tess, and Emily. I agree with Molly's opinions about mayo, and I find that I will only eat dishes with well-hidden mayo. I'm from Iowa and grew up around a lot of mayonnaise-based foods. I once went to a funeral of a distant relative where they served kinds of salad sandwiches like chicken salad, egg salad, ham salad, etc. I ate the top three rolls and didn't touch the mayo salads. This is getting long, but my main point is Miracle Whip. My sister loves mayonnaise but hates Miracle Whip. A quick Google search informed me that Miracle Whip was created in 1933 by Kraft as a less expensive alternative to mayonnaise. My sister will not touch Miracle Whip and will even avoid restaurants if she knows they use Miracle Whip. Any thoughts about the sauce that has been called boiled dressing or salad dressing spread? Also, have you ever heard of Snickers salad? We've had it at my grandpa's house growing up. I've attached the recipe here, which we will add to the notes on this podcast.
Thoughts? What? I want to know what's in Snickers salad to start off.
Well, first talk amongst yourselves.
Well, so I, as some of our listeners may know, am also from Iowa. I worked in the deli, the grocery deli at our grocery store in Iowa City for about a year. And it involved slinging mayonnaise-based potato salads and ham salad is the worst. Ham
it's the
salad
worst. It's pink.
Is the worst idea for a food. And I am not opposed to chicken salad. I think it can be quite good.
Ham salad is the funniest term in the world.
Have you ever seen ham salad, Molly? I have seen it.
I once made friend of the podcast, Max Silvestri, take a bite of a ham salad sandwich and then spit it up into our other friend's hand for a film I made.
Well, so this is the technical thing I want to get into here, which is that we had giant vats of mayonnaise, of course, because this is a grocery store in the Midwest. But we to make the salads, there was actually a different substance that you used as the base for it that was called salad dressing that was also white and basically was, I think it was basically Miracle Whip, but it was a little more runny.
Yeah.
and not quite, I think it had a more tang to it too.
There's a British thing called salad cream.
Yeah, yeah.
That I feel like falls into this category also.
It's somewhere between like a runny sour cream and mayonnaise.
It's also the idea of you just like mayonnaise is your salad dressing. You just want like a runny mayonnaise right. for your salad.
Well, guys, haven't you ever mixed up a salad dressing from some mayonnaise and mustard and like vinegar and stuff?
No.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. I'm going to tell you really quick about Snickers salad. So this is from Taste of Home magazine, the recipe, candy bar apple salad. This creamy sweet Snickers salad with crisp apple crunch is a real people pleaser.
It
makes
mallow
a lot.
Fluff?
Oh, you'll see. It makes a lot, which is good because it'll go fast. 1.5 cups cold 2% milk, one package instant vanilla pudding mix, one carton frozen whipped topping thawed, four large apples chopped, four Snickers candy bars cut into 1/2-inch pieces.
Well, they gotta eat that fruit somehow.
I don't even understand what that would make.
Well, so that's like
a pudding apple.
It's a thoroughly bastardized Waldorf.
Waldorf, yeah.
Yeah.
But Waldorf doesn't have candy. It's just like apples.
It's
and
a Waldorf
it nuts,
salad.
So if it's
with
like the Snickers is your nuts portion.
And instead of mayonnaise, you have pudding.
Yeah.
What?
It's real 70s dinner party right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, 70s dinner party. Shout out to one of our favorite Instagram accounts that just is all stuff like that.
Yeah.
Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise.
Yeah, we should talk about
it's
Miracle Whip.
It's not mayonnaise, and it's awful. It belongs nowhere.
You know, I also worked in a cafeteria, and I want to know, like, my main experience of working with bulk food was that it would, like, put me off some things forever, you know?
Yes.
Like,
it did. It put me off of fried chicken forever because I had to fry the chicken.
Right. Ooh. Like, the fact that you, like, dealt with big vats of mayonnaise and came out of it just, like, pro-mayonnaise.
Well, I didn't. At that time, I was not that big of a mayonnaise fan. What got me into mayonnaise... This is, again, my argument for why mayonnaise is not necessarily the whitest food ever.
I like this argument.
It was, one, going to Six Flags when I used to, like, work with these kids, like, at this after-school program, most of whom were Hispanic and Mexican, and they introduced me to the joy of getting, a cone of French fries and dumping mayonnaise and hot sauce all over them, mm-hmm. which I hated mayonnaise before that, and I was like, oh, this is like Belgian, but like on a different level entirely. Like, this
no, you're
is
right
so
though.
Much
there's
better.
Also like there's mayonnaise on elotes. There's like
yeah,
the
no,
argument.
Totally.
Like mayonnaise is used widely. I'm not trying to make like a grand objective argument against it. I'm just saying like subjectively to me, it tastes bad. The way that to you, Emily, an even more controversial opinion, you like don't eat cheese, which is like, but to you, cheese, like all cheese, like just doesn't taste good.
It doesn't. I mean, I appreciate the idea of cheese, but I can't personally do it. I'm not trying to get other people on my wavelength.
You said something once where you were like, I think, I don't know if you were talking about the 30 Rock episode, but you were like, yeah, other people talk, like, you know how other people just will, like, eat a whole block of cheese at night? And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You were like, I can't imagine ever doing that. Like, yeah. What is that like? And I was like, that's crazy.
Do you eat a block of cheese at night?
No, but, like,
don't you get so phlegmy?
I eat cheese. Yeah, but, like, I am lactose intolerant. And I just, like,
that's
sometimes
so crazy.
I just, you know, chase the cheese dragon.
The cheese dragon.
I'm on Kraft's website right now, and they have reviews of Miracle Whip. And wow, yeah. Somebody contacted them about, okay, this new blend is nasty. It is still labeled the original. However, it is far from it. Check the ingredients if you have an old bottle around versus a new one. The old bottles say salad dressing on them. The new something about creamy mayonnaise taste. I, for one, will never purchase Miracle Whip again in its current mix.
Ooh. Good.
Yeah. No.
And others, may they follow your example. Like, let's drive out the Miracle Whip.
The other thing about Miracle Whip is it is full of sugar.
Yeah.
And I think that because it was supposed to have like less fat or something than mayonnaise, but I think it's just like eating.
There's got to be people who like Miracle Whip better than mayonnaise, though, just because they like enjoy the taste of it.
But there is no taste, is the point.
Right, but you know, some people like
they just want
diet
the
soda.
You want the moisture.
Yeah, the slide.
You want the lotion for your sandwich.
It puts the lotion on its ham.
It is ham lotion.
It is.
Oh, you guys are really selling it to me.
Hey, actually,
buy some delicious ham lotion.
Ham lotion is a
It'll
really great
It'll make your ham
segue.
Salad go down just right.
I think we have to
now
table
this. Now is a good time to
now.
Talk about other things that
like
made
Satan.
Me feel like I was going to throw up for 2 hours.
Guys. Hereditary is now out on video on demand. I was counting the days.
Oh my
I've been
God.
So excited to see this movie.
We're talking about this movie when it came out in theaters, which must have been in the spring.
It was over the summer.
In the summer.
In
early
June,
summer.
I think. Yeah.
Time is such a roller coaster right mm-hmm. now. Who can tell?
Nobody knows.
But yeah, Tess was like definitely doing a watch clock of how many days were left until this movie came out, and then she watched it, and then y'all were like, Molly, you have to watch it. And then I did.
You kind of volunteered. I was very profoundly disturbed by Hereditary, but I loved it. And I was like, I'm not going to force her to watch it.
Yeah,
but
no, had a diplomatic way of putting it.
Thank you.
I will not put this on anybody.
I was also like, I don't want to be the person who didn't see the movie. And like, I managed to not get spoilers for it until now. I should just watch it. And then I couldn't convince my boyfriend to watch it with me, so I watched it alone. And that was a mistake.
So, Hereditary is an interesting... So we were talking before we started recording the podcast about how Hereditary is the first feature-length film from Ari Aster, I believe is his name. And he was known for two really controversial shorts that he did before Hereditary. One of them, Munchausen, which deals with a problematic mother-child relationship. One of them, I think it's called The Strange Thing About the Johnsons, which was his AFI thesis, which is...
No spoilers.
Just look it up if you're curious.
Controversial.
Yeah.
But just...
It is perhaps the most taboo preface.
He makes movies about familial horror.
Yeah.
Which is probably our favorite genre of horror.
I think it's the most affecting subgenre of horror, I would say.
We were talking about it's like The Exorcist. Is that... And Rosemary's Baby, is that? The Shining, is that? Mm-hmm. All of these things are about parental relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I've never seen Poltergeist.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you haven't seen Poltergeist?
What's going on?
I just know that the parents smoke pot and that it's like a chill movie.
Very chill movie.
So chill. Yeah.
Makes you very concerned about digging a pool.
Should I watch it?
Yes. It's so good.
Yeah, Poltergeist is pretty
good. Can we just do a horror movie like every week until the end of Halloween season?
Yes.
It's already begun as far as I'm concerned.
Let's do it.
Last week after the podcast, I walked to the Halloween store in the old Circuit City down the street.
Oh, nice.
I was like, me and some other people were like the first people in the Halloween store. Like, hey, great. It's September 7th. I was ready for Hereditary.
So Hereditary, I did not see it at Sundance when it was there, but it was one that everybody, like, this is a thing now. Sundance is like the best place. Like, it's iffy on other things coming out of there, but like all the horror stuff that comes out tends to be pretty A+.
There's been so much good horror coming out in general.
And my friend Aaron also co-wrote the other good horror film that came out of it that's coming out this week, I think, called Mandy with Nick Cage in it.
Oh, I watched the trailer for that also, and it also seems like there's a lot of just
it's
Satan
a good time
cult
right
horror.
Now.
It's a good time for horror. I mean, I know there's a lot of debate within horror about the sort of art house horror.
Well, yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit because I think that a lot, like after this film came out and the first wave of people saw it, and people talked a lot about how like it's not like a dumb horror movie,
right?
It's
which is what people always say. It's like all the good horror movies are smart.
Also, I mean, if you like horror films, like there are some that are clearly made with a bigger budget or with producers who can get like fancy actors like Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne. And then there are ones that don't. And doesn't really actually reflect that much on the premise or the ability to be scary.
Well, you know what producers got those stars? Toni Collette and Gabriel Byrne produced the movie.
Yep. Toni Collette is so amazing in this film. It cannot be said enough. I think that this film worked better for you guys than it did for me. I really like it, and I appreciate it, and I think it's very smart and well-made. But I think that we can all agree that Toni Collette is just like... I haven't seen a more performance.
She's the best.
This year.
All the performances were great in this movie, though. And I mean, I thought that they were really like the girl whose name is Millie, and I forget her last name.
She originated the role of Matilda on Broadway.
Phenomenal in it as well. I mean, everybody in this movie really carries their load.
I also thought it was funny she originated Matilda because then they contact her through the seance and there's like chalk writing on a chalkboard. Spoiler. We're going to maybe spoil this movie.
I don't know how much we should spoil it necessarily. But we'll feel it out.
She was not the one who communicated via chalkboard. She was, there's another person beyond. Yeah.
You're right. We all like Nat Wolf or Alex Wolf, one of the Wolf brothers, one of the Naked Brothers Band brothers.
I think it's
Alex Wolf. They're both in movies. He plays the son. He was really great. Gabriel Byrne is really great. Toni Collette, we were saying, like, she should have the Tilda Swinton level of fandom from people.
Because she's the mom of this family. She's an artist who does miniatures. So we were saying it was like a side quill to tiny furniture. But I love miniature stuff. I love like shooting miniature stuff on film and that depth of focus. Like I like a lot. And but there is something unsettling about it. And I've never seen it used to like a horror purpose in
yeah,
the same way.
Yeah, it was used very well. It was yeah. like using the tweeness of it to be creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So she, her mom has died, and her mom had this like special bond with her daughter. And so they're doing the funeral and the wake and everything. And the daughter is kind of not dealing with it. It's like hard to, I mean, the daughter is a, how would you describe
the
her?
Daughter is evidently disturbed.
Yes. Yeah. And has a tic where she goes like that. A lot.
The daughter is disturbed, and the actress who plays her is very interesting looking
yeah.
and has a very memorable face. And then there are like some twists that you don't see coming that I just thought it was going to be a totally different movie.
Yeah.
It was reminded me also of Get Out in that it was like what I thought it was going to be was so different from
right.
what it ended up being.
Had a lot of switcheroos.
Well, just also, like, it went in places that, like, I didn't see before. I didn't see coming.
Right. It has that feeling that I think makes it more scary where there's not a symmetry to it that there is for a lot of horror films where, like, everything you plant at the beginning ends up kind of, like, coming back in some... Like a way that you can appreciate it as being clever or something. At
some
the
of
end.
That does happen, but then
it
I'm
does.
Like, it makes you want to vomit.
Yeah,
because
that,
you
yeah.
feel so unsettled.
Well, I thought what was interesting, my husband keeps being like, let's watch it again and find all these hidden, because there's a lot of hidden
yes,
symbolism and
I'm
stuff.
Sure.
But one thing that I almost missed was that in the brother, whose character's name is Peter, in his high school class, they're talking about Greek mythology. And in an interview, and I think maybe Variety, the filmmaker was saying how he was really into the idea of, in Greek tragedies, how little kind of autonomy the characters have, how they're just kind of pulled along by fate and they can't really change the outcome of their story. And so he said that this was kind of a story about characters who, despite anything they did to try to correct the course, the outcome was already predestined
yeah.
and they were just kind of caught in this,
yeah.
you know, system, which is super interesting when you think about it, too, in terms of there are obvious connections between like the hereditary kind of curse, if you will, that has been, you know, put on this family by this matriarch who died. But also Toni Collette's character talks a lot about how mental illness in her family has kind of like caused all this trauma. She has two kids and she's, you know, clearly kind of talking about the like hereditary nature of, you know, the trauma,
yeah.
both like the trauma inflicted by like the death of her mom, who was secretive and crazy, and also just like the genetics.
Right. It gets away with both being a metaphor and actually the thing that
exactly.
it is, which is great. Because
yeah.
then the boundary between the two is so fuzzy that when you're thinking about it on your own, you're like, you know, if you've known anybody who's dealt with the like realistic half of it, then you're like, oh God, that makes it like so much more, I don't know, it just gets under your skin more.
That's yeah. kind of what I know you guys weren't super into it, but Sharp Objects also was very into a lot of the same territory of just like
inherited sorrow.
Inherited issues and like, you know, acknowledging them and then changing them, or like repressing them and then also not being able to change them. And yeah, just sort of like you don't get to choose.
What do you guys make of the discrepancy between the critical reviews of Hereditary and the audience
well,
reviews?
It did really well.
But on
though.
CinemaScore, it got a D+. But on Rotten Tomatoes, it got like a 90 or something.
But it became like a viral hit. Like it went wide really fast.
I think it made the most of any A24 movie.
I think yeah. I thought it was more of like a Conjuring type like jump scares movie. I thought the whole movie was going to be about the creepy little girl and her like becoming the grandmother or something. And then that's not what it was at all. You know,
if I'm not, maybe they did one limited release like New York, LA, but I think they very, very quickly went wide. And I don't think it was a box office thing. I think it was that they just knew they wanted to like release it to it. Because I remember being in North Carolina like the second week it was out and seeing it at like a multiplex there. Like I think
yeah.
it went, and I think it was one of those ones where they just like built the right kind of word of mouth about it. And then you know, by the time people actually saw it, you know, some people were disappointed because it ended.
They want jump scares.
It made them feel worse than they were prepared to feel.
Yeah. Maybe.
Another like low cinema score film that I think is fantastic and like maybe not even a horror film necessarily, but certainly a spooky film is The Witch, which is like another A24
film. Right. I think all of us probably are in the category of liking like a spooky psychological horror, mm-hmm. Not complete. Like I also
not at the expense.
Right.
Of
like
the
I
other
also
stuff.
Like yeah. slasher films. I definitely like tuned out of horror during the torture porn phase because it like wasn't for me. But then I like think the first Saw movie is good. You know, yeah. like there's nothing gimmicky in this movie that relates it to like other types of horror. I feel like
there's a lot to dissect, and I think I mean it reminded me a little bit of It Follows, which I understand I'm like very basic for loving It Follows, everybody's got an opinion, but
it
in the same you can
also,
unpack it for a lot like a much longer time than you can unpack most recent horror.
It just builds all this dread and then it like releases it all at the end, but then you still feel really bad. I was saying the movie it also felt like to me was A Serious Man. Mm-hmm. Which was another movie I made the mistake of like watching alone, you know? And then I was like just sitting there like I just want like to hug like anyone. Like I feel so bad right now.
I think there's something maybe this is a part where we can spoil it briefly or we can tell people to
fast forward
a bit. Yeah, let's
say spoiler zone starting now.
So I thought it was interesting to think about Hereditary as it compared to The Witch, actually, and sort of other general narratives that have been going on right now in horror. And this, like, idea of this kid, the boy in this instance, like, the son being the, like, King Paimon, the king of hell or whatever. What's his actual
title? He's, like, the god of mischief, I think.
The god of mischief. Okay.
He's a little Pazuzu man.
Yeah. I saw a really amazing fan art done of King Paimon like recently online that was very spooky and good. And then something like as opposed to The Witch, where it's also about an adolescent girl this time who kind of discovers that she has satanic or occult powers or potential or something like that. But I think the end of The Witch is much more almost victorious in a way, even if it is a little bit like if it has a dark side to it, it doesn't color the entire way that the ending of that film feels. And also, frankly, the ending of the new Suspiria feels. And I think that's interesting that, like, the story about the boy who comes from this cursed family and has this destiny to be this, like, demonic leader or god figure or something, that feels like he's just fucked,
right?
As opposed to like, yes, girl, like claim that crown, like cover yourself in blood. Like, I think that's super interesting.
It is.
What if I a little bit though was like, yes, Queen Lee, you did it.
Yeah. Well, my husband, after we watched it and before he suggested we see it again, and I was just like, no. We had looked at Paimon, and he was like, oh, he's you know kind of like a. You know, trickster. And he was like, maybe what this is really about is like the mind playing tricks on the character of Peter, the son, and that the whole thing is really just about, you know, his kind of like nervous breakdown. And spoiler, like he murders his family and then like has basically had a complete psychotic break. And the final scene, which everybody was very divided, and I think a lot of people who didn't like the movie kind of point to the final scene as being too heavy on exposition and stuff like that. But what if that scene is not what it is, but it's just him completely breaking with reality? And in a way, the treehouse, how, you know, she deals in miniatures inside this house that's kind of like this weird, like a lot of hallways and little rooms. And then there's the treehouse, which is small and it's a single room and it's usually lit up red. What if that doesn't actually exist and that's kind of like a realm unto itself where people go to like be crazy, essentially?
Well, there's like the moment when like Peter looks in the reflection and it's like
he's
making a different face in the reflection. That's like very subtle and freaked me out very bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it ends up being Peter's story despite him having the least to do for most of the
film. No, you think it's going to be all about Charlie, and then, spoiler alert, Charlie gets dispatched with.
Yeah.
You know,
and that was so intense.
Real intense way.
I mean, I think the thing about Greek mythology is super interesting, and that is so also not a way that movies now, especially horror movies, tend to work. But maybe that's one of the big differences between what people are calling arty horror movies and non-arty horror movies is the agency of the hero.
This makes The Shining seem upbeat, though, because of The Shining, they get away at the end.
Yeah.
It's a very downer movie. I mean, it's rough.
In The Shining, it's like it ends up that it's like he's just fucked. Jack is just like stuck there. But the other people get away. Yeah. This is like, no, you're fucked and nobody else can escape.
Especially your family.
Especially your family.
Well, because that was so much fun, maybe we should take a time to have an update on a question that was called in a few weeks ago that we've all been mulling over.
Now for some real life murder.
Yeah. All right. So here is a night call update.
Hey, guys. This is Chaz, the woodworker, who apparently has now become known as the guy with the murder board. Calling to give you an update, I guess. I listened to the show and all the advice you had and the commentary. There's a lot to think about. Really appreciated that. I had no idea that your fans were going to get so interested and start having polls and things. But anyway, just to clear up a couple things, a lot of people asked about, was it unsolved? No, the murder was not unsolved. The person who did it was in the house when the police they were found, like, immediately. So it's not a thing where you can, you know, solve the mystery and be like Nancy Drew or whatever. I guess the other update is that I did decide to take the job after listening to a lot of feedback, including yours. So that's pretty much it. I got a couple things in front of it, and I already told them it's going to take probably at least 2 months, but I will try to email you some pictures when it's done. No, I do not think I am opening a portal of death to anything. And as far as the questions about the wood that was used, no, I cannot prove that wood had blood on it. It has weird discolorations. I'll send you a picture. But again, you know, it's a paying customer, and how much I believe in it, I don't know. Hopefully my next call will not involve my basement turning into like an Indian burial ground with, you know, tombstones coming up to the floor. But that's pretty much it. And, you know, thanks for answering my question, and take care.
Jed, thank you so much for the update. I really hope we didn't put you on the spot.
No, thank you for the update. I feel like this is great. This is our second actual, I don't want to call it a case because we didn't solve anything.
Well, it's a thread.
It's a mystery, kind of, after the mystery of the ice cream truck ghost, which we did solve.
Yes.
This is
and then
satisfying.
Emily texted us the same ice cream truck hello.
Yeah, I passed by an ice cream truck that made the hello sound.
So scary.
Synchronicity, guys. I'm glad, Jed, that you're getting that money. I am glad that they caught the perpetrator of the grisly murder.
Yes, that was. I think that was probably our biggest piece of missing information. So I'm glad that we have that now.
And I look forward to seeing the results.
Molly looks uncertain.
Guys, you know what, though?
But you'll say he'll see
that's
it
what I was just
going to
say. I'm such a hypocrite because I'm the person who's like, don't do it. But then I made everybody say Hail Satan.
You did.
Because I'm just a cavalier.
Well, I sensed that it was not a bloody piece of wood from his call. I think that I feel like we wouldn't be having this conversation if it was.
No, he said, didn't he literally just say, like, I can't prove it, but there's discoloration?
No, he said, I can't prove the discoloration is blood. He doesn't think it's blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he doesn't think it's, he doesn't necessarily know it's not blood.
It's just a funky piece of wood.
Look,
it's
he a funky is piece just of wood. A humble woodworker.
Yeah.
Like
just
the guy
trying to make his bread.
Who played Jake Ryan. We were saying, what if it is the guy who played Jake Ryan? Because we know he's a woodworker.
So, well, you should tell our listeners that we were just talking about 16 Candles,
about
and that's where you
candles.
Got Jake Ryan is the name of the hot guy in 16
well, just,
Candles.
Well, it's funny to talk about people whose profession is woodworking.
He's a woodworker now. He retired from acting. He is too hot to have retired from acting, but that's the decision
oh,
he made.
And I went to the Magic Castle for a magician swap meet that my friend Emma Cunningham, who along
if you
with,
came to our dinner,
if you came to our live
you
show,
met her.
Emma both helped set up the stereo, the sound, and did card magic for people.
She did practical magic and magic for show.
Emma and her friend Anoop both did some strolling card tricks, and it was the greatest.
I was informed that we actually interrupted like a really good card trick of Anoop's. We just waltzed in and he had to like stop his card trick and I felt terrible.
Kind of was like, why are we even doing a show? We should just let our friends practice their card magic.
Next time there will be more magic.
Yeah. But I went to the Magic Castle for a swap meet, which was amazing because it was all magicians just selling tricks and pamphlets that explain tricks. Just none of that exists. They obviously are all doing real magic. But in the lobby where you are allowed to take pictures, in the gift shop, there was a Ouija board that is made of wood from the Magic Castle. And people were like, that must be haunted also.
For sure.
But I didn't
realize Ouija boards factor into Hereditary as well.
Yeah, I think I just, and The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. I think I just didn't realize that much that, we also heard an amazing story from a friend of the podcast that involved a demon possession and a Ouija board. Two different demon possession stories.
Yeah.
I don't want to say their identity in case the demons are looking for them. But.
Well, I'm glad to hear about this update.
Keep us posted.
Yeah, if the hell portal opens.
How does it take 2 months? I guess it's going to be a really nice Ouija board.
He has stuff to do in front of it, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
he has other things to get
up.
To. He's queuing it up. Putting in the queue.
Man. Also, having tried to like do woodworking before, I can imagine that takes a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe
I asked
Ouija
my dad
board,
to
actually.
Make a robot for me, and he whittled one out of wood, and it took a really long time.
Making a Ouija board does seem like it would be like a really fun woodworking project.
Yeah.
Like as an endeavor.
Because it seems approachable. It's just, it's doing that scoring, just doing all the letters and stuff in it. That would be the time-consuming thing.
Yeah.
That's like drawing.
Well, maybe someday we'll get a Night Call Ouija board.
Oh, and speaking of making things, on the Night Call Facebook group Night Callers, which you can go find, if you're good at finding things, should be easy. But somebody was like, hey, we should talk about what merchandise people want. And it was just a listener said this, which I'm very grateful to them for doing. But if you have an idea for merchandise, we are starting to talk about the possibility of doing merchandise in the future. So please weigh in. So far, people have suggested fanny packs and bike shorts. And we think both of those are great ideas.
Yeah, man.
I'm all into branded board games for things.
Should be easy to make those. We just have to figure out the rules of our own game. And
what about a Night Card tarot deck?
Oh, nice. Night cards?
Night cards.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to hear some comments about mayonnaise that were left on my Instagram?
Sure. you're gonna skew these results, though.
No, I'm not. People are all over the place. Somebody said, I'm no mayo evangelist, but it's a solid and vital condiment.
That's exactly how I would describe it.
Friend of the podcast, Rachel True, says, I will listen, but honestly, mayo is the devil's semen.
Rachel, come on the podcast.
Rachel, come on the podcast, please.
We've been wanting you to come on the podcast.
We want you to come
so
on the
bad.
Podcast, and we can talk about this too. And another person said, was surprised how long the sauce talk went on for. And yet there is so much left to be said.
Well, actually, speaking of which, I just looked at the Night Call Facebook. And so far, the mayonnaise poll, let's talk about mayonnaise, baby. Marissa, thank you for doing that. So the winner so far with 3 votes, mayonnaise is okay in an altered state, aioli, deviled eggs, etc. Mayo is delicious, comes in
mayonnaise
second.
Mayonnaise okay when you're on drugs.
That's also true. Mayo's delicious, is coming in second, and mayo disgusts me, only has 1 vote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you take enough acid, the mayo comes alive.
Well, it's base. You need your acid and you need your base.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Emily, see you soon.
Thank you, Garden of Sound, for having us in your padded booth.
Yeah.
Thrash around in conversationally.
As always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you have a question, comment, or story, call us at 240-46-NIGHT or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see y'all next week.
Hail Satan.